On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to an all-new Tall Can Sports Podcast. Rob over there.
Hey.
Matt over here. How's it going, man?
You know what? Couldn't be better. I love the addition, and it's been a while now, but I love the addition of the light the candle. To me, that it brings a smile to my face each and every time. It's so inappropriate. Like, to me, it doesn't fit a golfing scene.
Well,
really.
It's been one of my favorite sports sound bites for a while, but I'm also lately digging the OV on the end of the shows.
Yeah, well, and the only thing that would maybe, you know, be sort of, you know, incongruous or not fit is if you had, and boom goes the dynamite.
Well, you go back to, what's his name there, the color guy from the Senator, Grinder.
Yes.
That's a whole other story. Speaking of local to us here in Ottawa, some sad news before we get into the usual nonsense from around this place. This past weekend, Ray Emery, former goaltender for the Senators, Ducks, Flyers. Am I missing any?
Ducks, Flyers, Stanley Cup winner with the Blackhawks.
That's right. Yes. Senators.
Yeah, that's it. Four teams.
And maybe a KHL stint or two where
we tried to fight the trainer.
Right. Gotta love that.
I don't want to wear the fucking hat. Don't put the fucking hat on my head.
Honestly, if you haven't seen it, YouTube Ray Emery hat, probably. It's just he's gotten pulled from a game. There's a trainer just trying to put it on him. He, fuck away from me.
And then the trainer comes back and tries to put it on again. Hey,
take a hint, buddy.
Motherfucker.
Ray Emery, as we've kind of gotten away from the seriousness of the moment, but he was a bit of a character, so he'd probably be okay with it. Passed away this past weekend, found in Hamilton Harbor, begin with. Oh. Had been swimming with friends off a boat and didn't resurface at some point. Reports started to come out kind of midway through Sunday, but it wasn't confirmed until kind of later on in the day. I know he was, you know, kind of beloved here for a little while by the Senators, but then maybe there was some drama around him. What was your kind of reaction when you heard what was going on there?
And when he left here, he was actually just finishing the first year of a 3-year, $9.75 million contract, and the Senators bought him out.
So you want that guy gone.
Yeah, this franchise of all of them, Melnick was still owning it then.
Right.
If you're paying somebody six and change to go away,
right,
that just speaks to the level of
how ill-advised signing it in the first place.
Discontent, yeah, just with how we went. And again, we've sort of thrown in a bunch of stories here already at the front end of a story about somebody passing away at a very young age at 35.
Uh oh.
But that is, but really, the
got a clear 35.
Yeah. Well, it's
my lifestyle. Not much.
But two different stories there.
Different types of destructive yes. lifestyles.
But Ray and all reports, and I never met the guy, but yeah, he lived life in color, right? And so he would appreciate, I'm sure, being remembered for being vibrant. What's come to the forefront here so much is that there was a lot of negatives, you know, people saying things, you know, there was the altercation on the 417 with an elderly man, you know, threatening him because he was driving too slow or whatever the deal was.
Did he not threaten to kill him?
Yeah. Missing a team flight due to it. And,
yeah.
You know, not signing autographs, blowing
people
off.
Can I stop
off.
You there for a second? Because the missed flight was during the playoffs, wasn't it? Because the way there's been a couple of retrospectives written, a great one in The Athletic this week by Chris Stevenson, who obviously would have dealt with Ray quite a bit.
For sure.
And said that that story was that he missed the flight. He got himself on a commercial flight. I think it was to Philly for a playoff game, but I could be wrong on that part of it. And a reporter asked who was coaching at that point, Brian Murray,
yep.
whether or not he'd be suspended. And I think they were down 3-1, and Brian Murray answered, well, we'll see if we win tonight. Sort of the...
Yeah, well, and see, that would have been in the 08 season.
Right. So right after he had taken the Sens on
to the cup final the year
finals
before.
In 07.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of differing stories, right? People saying, yeah, he blew my kid off, didn't want to sign an autograph, didn't... And then you have other people saying, greatest guy ever.
Right.
Stayed at a charity function and signed for an extra hour, right? The one thing that is universal with him is there's not a place he played, including here in Ottawa, where he wasn't loved by his teammates.
Yep.
You know, they've had on local radio this week, they've had Chris Phillips, Wade Redden, guys who played with him and had to endure all the missed practices. And I say all of them. I'm not sure there was more than one or two, but
sure.
That's a lot for a professional athlete when
yep.
you're just blowing off practice. But they love him, and he would go to bat for them without fail, right? And it's funny, for somebody who's passed away tragically at the age of 35, the story that keeps getting floated, A, is his feisty, you know, approach to things, his willingness to mix it up and fight in games in junior, in the AHL, in the NHL, and not just goalies.
Right.
Right? The Andrew Peters fight gets a pile of play.
For
right?
people who don't know, too, Andrew Peters was a motherfucker of an enforcer.
Yeah, like a top five enforcer,
right.
I would suggest, in the NHL.
Yes.
And so he'd already, it was a heated match between Ottawa and Buffalo, right? I think that may have been the one where, you know, Lindy Ruff and Murray are yelling at each other, and they're good friends,
right?
Right? And they're looking, it's looking like the coaches are going to mix it up, and so everybody in the ice is going, and so Emery hooks up with Martin Biron,
with little French Canadian,
yes, with the piercing eyes, and Emery just dusts him, right?
Yeah,
and you can see it in the thing. Emery's trying to pull him back up to give him a couple more. When it's just funny, because listening to Biron on local radio the other day, he was saying after Ray, he goes, Ray never really connected with anything clean. He goes, punched me in the back of the head a couple times as I was ducking. He goes, and we went down in a heap, and Ray's like, do you want to get back up and go again? And Marty's like, yeah. He's like, I'm thinking, you know, this may be my Felix Potvin, Ron Hextall moment, right? I just need to get one good shot in. I got a rep that's made forever, right? So then after that breaks up. But as he gets up, then Peters gets involved.
Yeah,
and so I'm
Buffalo's
not sure,
enforcer. Yeah.
I'm not sure of the history of this, right? If they had some contentious moments in junior, you know, going back a ways. But it's odd to see an enforcer
fight a goalie.
Fight a goalie, right?
And the goalie smiling the whole way.
Honestly, loving, like, just, yeah.
Like, even as they're squaring off and getting ready, he's grinning. Like, oh, yeah. Like, this is my Felix Potvin Ron Hextall.
Yeah, this
moment.
Is it. I'm going to make a moment here. If I can take down Andrew Peters, look out. Rep made.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to listen to John Paddock, who was the assistant coach to Murray in the cup run, And the following year, he became the head coach as Murray, you know, on his own, bumped himself upstairs to become just GM. Record-setting, Paddock was the Eastern Conference coach at the All-Star game and then was fired shortly after. Like, that tells you that they started out like an unbelievable 15-2-1, whatever the start to the season was.
This would be 08-09?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, 07-08.
Okay.
07-08, the year after the cup run.
Okay.
The run to the cup.
Sure.
Just short.
Yeah.
It's important.
Semantics,
it's,
for sure.
Yeah, for sure. But I just, I don't want nasty emails tweets, people saying, there was no cup run. A cup run would mean that you'd have
everywhere.
To get the cup.
Like Flames and Oilers fans on our cup run, and there's like 30 replies. You didn't have a cup run.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just wanted to be clear on that.
Yeah.
And Ray was supposed to be the guy, but he was hurt. He had wrist injuries. He had a bunch. Marty Gerber was the guy who was in net for the most of that. But yet Paddock was the guy who went to bat for him when Philly wanted to bring him back from the KHL. Because when Ottawa bought him out, nobody wanted him. Nobody would touch that guy.
Imagine being the starting goalie in the Stanley Cup Finals in 2007, and within 36 months, no one wants you. Or less than that.
Less than that. Less than 24.
Months,
yes, exactly. And so after going to and doing a stint in the KHL, Paddock was the guy who vouched for him and said, if Ray's willing to come back and put the work in, he's a great guy to have.
So Paddock was in Philly at the time? Or they had called him
They inquired, because Paddock had him all 3 years in Binghamton and then was with him for the 3 years he was in Ottawa. So Paddock had a frontline view of Ray. And so apparently he was nothing but a gem in his backup time.
It's interesting when, the social media reaction that came out, I can't remember all of the names, but it seemed like a lot of the guys who were publicly coming out and everybody tweets their thoughts and prayers and whatever else. There seemed to be a lot of enforcers. And Brian McGrattan was the one who was the most...
Well, they're best friends.
Okay. But Brian McGrattan's been through some shit here recently, right? And, some substance abuse stuff that, has been publicized a little bit. But there was a lot of guys like Daniel Carcillo, right, who currently is on a mental health thing in terms of wanting to help guys who are going through that. Now, we don't know that that's Ray Emery, but there was some pretty publicized, again, maybe substance abuse problems that Ray may have been dealing with as time went on.
Some substance allegations, for sure.
Yeah. But it seemed like a lot of the guys who were coming out the strongest were guys of that kind of enforcer persuasion. And you don't really think of that when you think of goalies. But when you talk about the death of enforcers and fighting in hockey, all the teammates always loved their enforcers, right? And so it's interesting to see those types of guys were the guys who loved Ray.
And it was interesting because as they're going through all the tweets on the evening that he had passed, which was Sunday past, I believe. A lot of flyers too. James Van Riemsdyk, who was with him in Philadelphia.
Yep.
Claude Giroux. But also David Boltland also was another guy who, that's a Blackhawk guy.
Yeah.
But interesting to note too that in that year that Chicago won the Cup, I think 2013, he as a backup, well, maybe it wasn't 2013, because he was a back. Anyways, whenever he was a backup,
it would have been 2013, because I think 2010 was Huey and Niemi, was it not?
Right, yes. So 2013, he had a regular season record of 17-1-2.
There was, I don't remember what year it was. Maybe
didn't play a game in the playoffs. But.
Right. Maybe you will. There's a season, I saw a bunch of tweets on the Sunday that said if Emery had remained healthy the year he was with Philly, we would have won the Cup. Was he with them in 2010 when they faced Chicago? Or was that too soon after the KHL stand? Because remember, they went with Michael Layton. Like, they had all kinds of goals.
For sure. No, that was the year.
Yeah. So a bunch of guys that said when his head was on right, he was damn good. Now, you said a few minutes ago it was Marty Gerber who got the Sens through their hot start there the season after the Cup run. A year earlier, it wasn't supposed to be Ray Emery guiding the Senators.
Yeah.
Right? He replaced Dominic Hasek.
Yeah.
Who was supposed to be... Now, maybe that was 06, not 07. But
it was 06. It was Olympic year.
Yeah. So that was a disaster for Ottawa. But he took over the reins there, and then I guess they kind of ran with him through the 06, 07. But he was never supposed to be the guy.
No, not at that time.
Yeah.
Right? He was in a long line of drafted goalies like Simon Lajeunesse and your favorite Matthew Chouinard. Those sorts of guys. And you just thought, it's never going to pan out. Or Kelly Garden, Jeff Glass, these other sorts of super studs. But Ray Emery was a guy who got cut from, I don't know, eight different midget teams. Looked like he was he had to fight for everything he got all the way through, right? So, but he kept with it and he kept putting himself in positions to succeed.
It's funny, eh? Because he wasn't here when you actually look at it all that long, but the impact you can make in
113 or maybe a little more than that, 113 wins. I don't know, whatever, but 3 seasons.
Yeah. In a small NHL market, right? If you do the job and you have one of those stories, you know, the public will gravitate to you a little bit. And it was controversial for a little while afterwards, but it definitely felt like the city was behind him, even if management was getting tired of some of his shit. In the same Chris Stevenson piece there for The Athletic, and I'll share it, but it's, again, subscription required but recommended. They were talking about how tight for a while he and Alfie were in the locker room and that they used to like to wrestle around and shit like that. But there were other times where Alfie would be skating in and to make a point when he knew Ray was hungover or not trying his hardest, instead of even taking a shot on him, he'd just shoot it in the corner and be like, fuck you, if you're not taking this seriously, then.
Well, see, that's the thing, right? Gord Wilson, who has been the play-by-play, I mean the color guy for Ottawa forever, since their inception, he was saying, you know, a pure athlete, Ray Emery. But he said, and a former goalie himself, Gordy, not you know, professional.
Sure.
He's saying he's never seen a lazier, less committed practice goalie, right? Which, man, your teammates depend on that.
Yep.
Right? That's the thing. But, yeah.
Look, it seems like nothing, but if I'm coming down and I'm trying to get I'm working on a new shot or I need a new curve in my stick or whatever, I need to know whether that's a stoppable puck or not. And if you're just, you know, waving at it and don't really care, you're fucking with all of us, right?
This is it. Yeah. And so that is the story of Ray, right? Is just, and it, very interesting, TSN 1200 here, local radio, replayed an interview from 2011 that they did with him upon his, maybe it was 2010, upon his return to the NHL. And they asked him a bunch of things just about, you know, those sorts of things. And he's saying, yeah, you know what? He goes, I didn't give it the, you know, the respect it deserved or that I needed to.
Right.
Right? He goes, and sadly, it's one of those things you don't know until you don't do it. You don't have it. It's taken from you.
Yeah.
And so upon his return, he's a much different guy. And clearly a great backup. And everybody loves a backup, right? He's the guy who's going to stick around late, which is odd, right?
Yep.
He's the guy who's going to stay late in practice and let you work on things. You know, you need a couple extra shots, which is a total contrast. But he was just a young guy here when he was here. And he needed, he just clearly, and he admitted it later, he needed the maturing.
And as, you know, we kind of go full circle on it and wrap it up and talk about, you know, what he battled and at his best, at his worst, you know, if you're found swimming with friends at 6 a.m., it's awfully early to be out with friends unless it's awfully late to be out with friends, right?
Right. So. And so you had sent me a thing saying, I don't want to be that guy.
Well, yeah.
No, and really, yeah, it's just you and I and now all the listeners
in
on that. But everybody thinks that too. You go, wow, that's...
You hear some things, which makes you wonder some things, and
either way you go. And now they label it as no foul play, as misadventure.
Yeah,
Christ, who hasn't been involved in misadventure, man? Honestly, there's a bunch of things where I could just as easily have. I don't get the headlines, but misadventure abound. I've been involved in all kinds of misadventure.
Yeah, I think what I said to you, since we're putting it all on the table, was I'm not surprised to hear he's gone early. I'm a little surprised with the way he's he's gone early, right? And yeah. But who knows what that all leads to.
Well,
it doesn't mean I don't find it sad. It just means certain names where you're going, this could end poorly, right? Like,
right. And I think he had, and I don't, again, I don't pretend to know anything about him, but yeah, reports, he had sort of got his stuff together for the most part.
Okay. Well, that makes it even sadder. As we kind of shift away from this.
Characters.
The Toronto Raptors make an interesting, if nothing else, move with the San Antonio Spurs earlier today. We wanted to bring in our NBA guy, just a wee fella, to talk about.
My brother from a much smaller mother.
to talk about that for us. The Raptors trade DeMar DeRozan and some other guy I'm not sure I'd ever heard of.
Poeltl.
Yeah. Sounds like a Czech. Jakob Poeltl.
Yeah. I don't know.
Nope. And a protected first round pick to the San Antonio Spurs for Kawhi Leonard, Danny Green. Yeah. And lots to cover there. So I was far from qualified from covering that, so we brought on our NBA guy, Matty Lang, to talk about it. That phone call we'll get to right now. So as promised on the line is our NBA guy, Matty Lang. Matt, second time in a week, not bad, eh? You were saying you were feeling a little lonely before.
I guess I'm that easy to get, aren't I?
Well, that's the kind of it, right? So, I know you're in
not even dinner and a drink, buddy.
No. You got to earn that. You knew what this was. There's been a fascinating reaction online, man. The team has been banging their heads against the wall for a little while now, and the reaction is not one that I expected, because after this most recent loss to the Cavaliers, it was clear that change was needed. They fired a 59-win coach and have now traded the face of the franchise and arguably the best player in franchise history. And some fans aren't really happy. And if you wanted to change the direction, this was kind of what was coming, wasn't it?
God, only in Toronto, right? Like, we went from being a perennial loser, even in the Chris Bosh era, to making the playoffs, and that was great for a bit. Now we've had a couple good runs of 50-plus win seasons, and that was great for a bit. But really the point of North American sports is to win a championship. End of discussion. And if you aren't in that discussion, you need to change something. This is not a market where you can just be status quo or you can be the lovable losers all that long. It wasn't 2 months ago we were all complaining in this city and across the country, I suppose, that something had to be done. And in one camp, there was people like myself who thought the coach needed to go. And there was other people who said, well, it's really Masai Ujiri's fault, the president, for not making the moves, not bringing the right players in. So we get a coach firing after a record-breaking season to change the culture, to change the plays, to change the outlook of the team, if nothing else. We bring in a guy who wants to play Houston Rocket-like basketball. A lot of threes, a lot of ball movement. Nick Nurse is the guy who actually implemented that system for Houston in the minor leagues prior to coming over to Toronto and before Houston actually ran it on the NBA level with Mike D'Antoni. And everybody's up in arms saying it's Masai's fault. We didn't bring in the players. It's not the coach. How could we turn our back on the coach? It's not his fault. Now, all of a sudden, we trade our 1A or our 1B player.
Right.
A top 20 NBA player, a perennial all-star. A perennial all-star because he gets a lot of votes in Toronto. But he's a gold medal winning player as well for USA Basketball. But we trade him for the chance to get a top 5 player in the league. And only in Toronto, where we appreciate our third-line grinders more than our superstars, are we now up in arms again complaining, how could we get rid of this guy? Well, Raptor fans, choose a fucking side. And mind my little bit of a rant here, but watching Twitter today, and I've wasted way too many hours today on Twitter.
No doubt.
Just following the fan base, but also following all the NBA guys. It is so mind-numbing if you're a fan of this team and you follow this team. But it's absolutely asinine, this fan group. We can't win. No matter what this management group does, this fan group continually is upset with the moves being made. And the number of fans I've heard today or people tell me over text message, well, wasn't it going to be different because LeBron is gone this year, are missing the point. They're missing the point that we've been futile and we haven't won anything. And don't get me wrong, having an NBA player from SoCal nonetheless wanting to live and appreciate Toronto is fantastic. But I want rings. I want banners. We talked about this the other day with the Leafs. How many times can we celebrate Darcy Tucker?
Right.
I want John Tavares. Well, now I got John Tavares, and I don't know what's going to happen with Kwai. I don't know if his mood is or what's going to happen or what he thinks his next move is. But if he plays in Toronto, he's going to be exposed to 35 million Canadians in a number of different market ways. And I don't think he quite understands what it's like to be in the city, because the only time he's really come is once a year and for the All-Star break, which happened to be the coldest fucking weekend in the last decade.
Yeah.
Right. So, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. It's not the LA move he wanted to make, but neither was Oklahoma City for Paul George last year.
Right. The common, you know, knowledge, the consensus right now seems to be, and Chris Haynes of ESPN is reporting as much, that he made it very clear to the Raptors before they made this move he had no desire to play in Toronto. Do you think there's a chance he missed most of last season. Would he risk sitting this one out?
No, I don't think you can sit out 2 years in a row.
And they can hold him up, right? They can suspend him kind of game for game, and if he doesn't report and kind of he doesn't get to go anywhere at that point, right? He owes them that time.
Exactly. And I'd find it really hard to believe that any team in this league would look past that, even the Lakers, to give him the max contract he wants. We're talking about a guy who's a max contract player a year ago. There seems to be more to San Antonio than just he wanted out of San Antonio. There were some issues with Nike and the Jordan brand. There was a bungling of his injury and getting different opinions from different doctors. There's more to it than just he didn't want to play in San Antonio.
Right.
I think it got to the point where he didn't trust San Antonio anymore, from the stories that I keep gathering.
Well, it kind of became clear as the season went on, right? Both his coach and his teammates became more and more frustrated every time they were asked about it. And part of that would be being asked about a guy who isn't there, but part of it would be that, was there not a report that stated his teammates kind of called him into a private meeting and said, you got to play? And he just said no, like that they didn't even necessarily believe he was still hurt.
Oh, yeah. And more than that, I mean, Tony Parker, one of the elder statesmen in the NBA at this point, fully came out and threw him under the bus, like on the news,
right?
Claiming that he had the same injury at the same time that was worse and got better, essentially.
It's hard to,
It's hard to go back from that.
Well, sure, but it's also hard to know, one quad tear from another, and, I had that injury and it healed, and everybody heals differently, everybody gets treated differently, but I think once that bridge is burned in the locker room, it's a problem.
I think you're right there, right? So as soon as that bridge gets burned, you're not coming back, and it's funny, it is Tony Parker's no longer with the Spurs either. Right. But I think the organization burnt their bridges. Maybe they were trying to spur him into coming back, and it definitely misfired. I don't think you ever want to get rid of a top five guy, no matter what the case. And at the same time, I think as much of a risk as it is for the Raptors, as much as it might be he never plays a game, which I think is not going to happen, he can be upset and still play and still play well. He's still playing for a contract next year. He's got to prove to everybody in this league that his knees are okay.
So that was the next thing I wanted to ask you about is, by all accounts, and maybe you can explain a little bit how this shakes loose in terms of NBA cap rules and whatnot, apparently he has walked away from what the Spurs could have offered him $210 million. The Raptors can only offer him $190 million. And if he walks away from them, it's only $150 million. Is that right?
Yeah, it works out to roughly that math. It has a lot to do in the NBA with bird rights.
Right.
Reaching bonuses and your time with the team. It's a little more complicated in the NBA.
Right.
The only way you can really go over the cap is by re-signing your own players at those max and super max contracts. So the Spurs could have offered him what they call the super max, which
because he'd been there longer than he will be there with the Raps.
Yeah, it has to do with tenure, but also I can't remember. There's a couple equations. One's like being, you know, NBA All-Star, one's being and like all NBA team. It's a little bit of a convoluted, confusing math, but that obviously gives the Raptors still the best offer next year,
right?
If they're so inclined. But this was a calculated risk the Raptors had to make at the end of the day. This is what it comes down to. We can't keep rolling. What's that definition of insanity, right? Doing the same thing, expecting a different result.
Yep.
There's only so many times you could have rolled that dynamic duo out and hoped for a better result.
Well, and you mentioned, right, the last time you were on, I believe that, you know, Boston is going to be better. Philadelphia is going to be better. It's nice to say that, well, LeBron left, and so Toronto's chances went up. They probably did, but it's not to say that they were going to walk through uncontested. They needed to improve, and if Kawhi Leonard is healthy, he might be the best player in the East.
It'd be hard to argue that he's not the best player in the East, right? He's right there with Kyrie Irving, who's coming back from a much more difficult to predict knee injury, one that involves a small bone infection, if they can ever be small.
Right.
And Gordon Hayward, who completely fractured and dislocated his ankle in game one of last year. So he's coming back to he's coming into an Eastern Conference, rather, that's in flux.
Yeah.
I think this makes the Raptors at least the second best team. I think they're much better than
behind
Philly.
Behind Boston, ahead of Philly, yeah.
Yeah, I think they slot right into there. You know, the X factor being we don't know how the team dynamic's going to be, and we don't know how Nick Nurse is really going to coach, and if he's going to be a super effective coach just yet, right? He's just, right now, he's just an amazing assistant coach who's been promoted.
Sure.
And we know on the other side, Boston has Brad Stevens, who's probably the second or third best coach in the NBA at the moment. So, compare that to Philly, who has, you know, dynamic players in Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, another kind of also ran coach, and zero depth. So the Raptors definitely slot in above those guys. But it's going to be a dogfight this year to get through the East. Against Boston, really. That's the team you're gunning for at this point.
So I know you don't have a ton of time. A couple of quick things here before we let you go. What do you think of the DeMar side of this? He's frankly unhappy. He was pretty honest about that on his Instagram. Lots of sources saying he's pissed. Lots of his teammates, former teammates, coming out and saying that when they think Raptors ball, they think DeMar DeRozan. Does he have a right to be pissed? There's some talk he was promised that he wouldn't be traded. What's your take on that?
It's a sad time. I get this is maybe where most Raptor fans who are upset about this trade are upset. DeMar was kind of our guy. He was the guy when Masai came in and we were clearing house. He was the one that said, you know, I got the team, I got the city. And he repeated those comments. And he's a guy who really came of age in Toronto, and the city really embraces him as much as he embraced the city.
Yeah.
Listen, it's a business, and would I have preferred them to keep DeMar and get Kawhi? Sure. But you're not going to get a guy of that skill level without giving something else up. I can't speak to what he was promised, obviously, but if he was promised he was going to stay, I hope it
makes Masai look pretty bad, though, right?
That's it. And I hope Masai is able to maybe explain it or justify it or have a conversation with him, because it would be an awful way for that relationship to end.
Well, and it's one less thing you can sell to free agents, right? Masai is very well respected. You're kind of done being able to promise you can trust us and shit like that, right? Like, we're a family.
Well, that's it. And for a team that's really sold themselves that way for the last number of years.
Right.
that would be, and that being said, somebody posted this today on Twitter. Does anybody remember, and maybe I'll pose this question to you, do you remember the last star free agent that came to Toronto?
In the NBA?
Yeah.
Muggsy Bogues, right?
Okay, not that quite long ago, but
right.
Still, we're going back about 10 years.
Charles Oakley? I don't know.
Right? Like, even that was a trade, right? Yeah. Every good player we've gotten has been through trade.
Right.
Hedo Turkoglu.
Oh, that went really well.
Which, yeah definitely blew up in our face.
Ball.
And if you want to call him a star player, he was definitely a star player before showing up in Toronto.
Yeah.
God, that tells you one thing. Star players aren't exactly looking to come to Toronto. It doesn't matter how well we sell them on the city or how great the fan base is.
This isn't
a needle stick that's moving. So does that hurt a free agent? Sure. Maybe we can't tell them we're friends and family anymore, but I'm not sure they were going to come here anyways, to be honest with you.
What do you think, you know, in terms of if Kawhi has made it clear halfway through the season, have the Raptors kind of thrown all their chips in here? They managed to hold on to OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam, which a lot of people are happy about. If it's clear mid-season, no matter how well it's going, that he's not going to re-sign, will they consider shipping him out to the Lakers or the Clippers and trying to get a kickstart on the rebuild? Or is this them pushing all their chips in and saying, even if he's going to walk at the end of the year, we'll take 1 year of him versus 2 years of DeMar, and we're going to take a run?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's being completely, not misinterpreted, but jumped over with a lot of the fan base who are upset about this. If Kawhi walks, what do we just do? Well, DeMar was signed a little bit longer, but with Kyle and Serge, they've only got 2 years left.
Yeah.
So if we run through this year as a team and we fall in the first round, the second round, whatever it is, get embarrassed in the finals, whatever it might be, Masai was going to hit that detonation button anyway.
Right. You're on the precipice of a rebuild here.
Right. This is the last legs of this version of the Raptors, right? This is the heading towards the end of an era, and we haven't done anything yet of note.
Right.
Other than maybe sign Drake. So, and rank that where you want in Raptor history.
I think Drake's going to be moving in with him for the next couple of months, in with Kawhi, trying to convince him to stay. But
I'm sure he has a room at the Ritz.
Sure.
That Kawhi could stay with, right?
Yeah.
Where was I with my thought there? Because then Kyle and Serge are kind of expiring contracts and things are going to be moved anyways. By getting Kawhi now and not giving up OG and not giving up Siakam and not giving up Fred VanVleet or DeLon Wright, not only does that keep the team's depth and flexibility, but it also allows us, in case it's not going well, to move these guys. You know, one, two, or all three of them at that point. Because at that point, we're making everybody available.
Right.
I don't think it matters if he resigns or if he's giving indication he's resigning or not. I think they're going all in this year. And if they're playing well and if they're a top three team going into the playoffs, they're sticking with this crew and they're going to move forward. Minus, you know, picking somebody up off the waiver wire.
Sure.
Or maybe making another trade for a star if somebody else presents themselves. But they are going, this is the indication that Masai is going all in because he knows he's playing with house money. This team's getting broken up anyways. So you might as well take one dig at it and go for gold.
I know you got a flight to catch as you're heading towards Pearson. And you look back at this, good day or bad day for the Raptors?
I think this is better than a good day. I think this is exciting. I think this is, we haven't had a star like this since Vince Carter.
Yeah.
And Vince was definitely a one-dimensional player, maybe one of the greatest scorers ever when he wanted to be. Kawhi can do things on both ends of the floor. If he wants to play and play for a contract, he's going to turn this team into a defensive juggernaut. He can shut anybody down in the NBA. He can shoot from three. The second piece in the trade, Danny Green, 39% from three last year. better than anybody on our team right now. This is a much more dynamic, a team with more options. You've now moved DeMar, who needs the ball quite a bit, for a guy who doesn't actually need the ball all that much.
Right.
I think we're going to see a lot more balanced scoring from the team. We're going to see different guys go off at different games, and we're going to see that defense be a lot better this year. And I think it's an exciting time. I think it's an exciting move. And we better enjoy it because it might be bad starting next summer. So we better soak it all in. But for a – and you know this. I'm a season ticket holder going on about 5 years now. I go to a lot of games every year. I had no interest in this team moving forward the way it was constructed. And at this point, it's not like I'm going out to buy a jersey with his name on the back. But right. Bringing Kawhi in definitely is going to get the true basketball fans in the city excited. And the Johnny Come Lately fans should get just as excited because this is finally a chance, a legitimate chance, not propped up by the media members at Sportsnet, to actually make a good run at this.
It's an interesting one. As you've mentioned, there were other pieces, lots of time over the summer to break it down a little bit more. And I have a feeling this is going to be one that keeps creating news for a while as we see just how Kawhi has been very quiet so far on social media. I think at some point that'll change and we'll see a lot. But
his last tweet was 2015, so don't hold your breath.
Yeah, fair enough. He's an interesting guy. This is going to be an interesting season for sure. We'll have lots of time to get into it. Appreciate you making the time before you head over to the airport. Maddie, have a great trip.
Thanks, buddy. Talk to you soon.
So there goes Maddie Lang boarding a flight to Italy. Off
that mofo jet sets a bit, eh?
Honestly, man, all over the place.
Easy, right? It's like a lap dog.
You can just kind of throw them in the overhead.
Exactly.
Or something.
Yeah. Or babies. You can put them on their lap. You don't have to pay for the extra
seat. Full seat. Yeah. Nice. Oh, wait till he hangs up to bash him. That's kind of how things
work. Sorry about that, Maddie.
Yeah. So lots of good stuff there. You can follow Maddie on Twitter at Matthew Lang. Lang has an I in it for some reason, but that's all over our Twitter feed at Tall Can Audio. You can find him there too. So, good stuff there. What were your thoughts on it, man? I know you and I aren't huge NBA fans, but...
Well, it's everywhere today, right?
Yeah.
And this is traditionally the slowest sports day in the calendar year.
That's true. Yeah, day after the All-Star game.
However, the Raptors and the Spurs decided to make it interesting. I think there's no way the Raptors were going to be able to roll back in with their two milquetoast, air quotes, superstars... soft stars, whatever they are.
Right.
With you've fired your coach of the year, most successful coach in franchise history.
Yeah.
You still have these two soft turds. Like, what are you going to do, right? You knew there had to be a change.
Yeah.
And we'll see what...
And what a change.
Well, this
one
is
way or another, there's going to be change.
Right. And you know what? The soft... Again, I keep coming back to the word soft. But
funny that.
The whimper... That the Raptors went out with, and DeRozan had in that series against Cleveland.
He's sitting on the bench for their only shot at a comeback, game three, I think it was.
Couldn't muster, not even a wet fart.
Right.
So, yeah, nobody should really be surprised, right, that this team that didn't have a pile of leadership, didn't have a pile of direction, you lost the direction in the coach, now you're bringing in the assistant coach. Now, I know Maddie...
To me, that's weak, though.
Yeah, Maddie seems to feel like he's going to be able to implement some stuff.
I disagree with him.
But Danny Green is a 40% three-point shooter.
Yep.
Right? And so that seems to be the way Nurse likes to go.
I think in terms of players, they've made sizable change here. In terms of coaches, this wasn't getting it done. Here's his assistant. You're like, all right.
Yeah. Well, it's like saying... We're not going to fire anybody, but we're going to flip the assistants.
Yes, exactly.
You were involved with the D, now you're involved with the offense. And you were involved with the offense, now you're the D. There we go. There's fucking change right there.
You run the PP and you run the PK.
Yeah, well, that smacks of being very forward-thinking. Not.
Yeah. It's an interesting one. It was big news. Like you said, it's been everywhere today, and I hadn't really connected the dots on the... This is kind of well-known as the only day of the year where there's... nothing happening, right? Your NFL, your NBA, your NHL are all off, and baseball had the All-Star game Tuesday night, and there's always this random Wednesday where nothing is going on. So to pull the trigger on this deal on that Wednesday, I guess maximizes your attention.
And just to finish my thoughts on it,
yeah.
And we'll echo what you and Maddie talked about, was he has to play this year.
Yeah.
Right? Now, somebody's going to give him a contract next year, but if he wants to max out on that deal,
right,
you can't go in on that six games you played last year.
Yeah.
And then where clearly it wasn't just a health issue. There was all kinds of other issues. You can't blow off Toronto. It behooves that guy to show up and do whatever he can to become that sort of top three or top five player in the league again, and then cash a big fat check next year.
Well, because whether Raptor fans want to hear it or not, he just sulked his way off maybe the premier franchise in the league. I know there are bigger names, but in terms of the way a team is managed and
not a more stable,
right,
coaching through leadership on the team
to consistently being competitive, right, all the way back through the Tim Duncan days, he was supposed to.
How about further than that with the David Robinson, the Admiral? Come on, man, you can't get much more solid guys than those two.
So this is fascinating. I tend to agree. He said he doesn't want to be in Toronto, but he may have to suck it up and really play. I wonder, though, if this isn't show up for 15, 20 games, show that you've still got it, and then kind of sulk your way through another injury for 60 games.
Well, and I deked out while you and Maddie were talking about it, but I was sort of in and out.
Yeah.
I was interested to see where Maddie, who is much more qualified than you or I to speak on this, I was interested to see where he thought that they would fit in the East with Philly and Boston, right? And did I hear you say right behind?
Behind Boston, ahead of Philly.
I mean, I'm wondering about that.
You got worse or better?
I'm seeing them behind Philly this year.
Yeah. Well, I've seen that take, right? I've seen a lot of people who, but it depends how healthy Kawhi is, how bad he wants to make a difference, right? He is now the best.
Why would you do that?
He seems to, you know, Maddie thinks anyway that it would be hard to make an argument if he's healthy that Kawhi now isn't the best player in the East.
I heard that, and that to me is very intriguing. Hands down, best player in the trade. And I like that sort of the Danny Green portion of it.
Yep.
If you need that outside shooter,
right,
you have the now.
And he himself also pretty good defensively.
So, hey. We'll see, and I don't know. And at the end of the day, I don't care.
Well, that's it, right? Like, I found myself the same thing today. I'm reading through all these articles and all this stuff. And again, maybe it is because it's the slowest sports day
for
of the year.
Sure, it is.
But I'm reading all this, going, "Fuck, that's interesting." But on opening night, I'm not sure I'll actually turn it on.
Unless somebody breaks their leg, like in the Boston-Cleveland game last year, whoever that guy was, horrifically breaks his leg, and then you go, "Okay, that's interesting too."
But really, I just want the highlight over.
Sorry about that. Yeah, the Theismann. Oh!
But I mean, if there's like a Jets-Blue Jackets game on, I'll probably just check that out.
Jets-Blue Jackets, eh? I'm thinking, you know, maybe Carolina.
Hurricanes. Yeah,
Carolina,
okay, yeah.
Florida, maybe. Yeah.
Okay, true. And if we're looking for the floor.
I think Blue Jackets-Jets may actually be an intriguing matchup.
50% of them, If Columbus is going to be down one Russian sniper, I don't like their chances of being much next year.
Yeah, but he's to me, the bread man.
I love how honest his agent has been in some of these write-ups. We're talking about, for those who don't know, Artemi Panarin, who has told the Blue Jackets he's not prepared to re-sign long-term. And in order to soften the blow, I guess it's, well, I like the team, I like the management, I like my team. I just don't think I want to live in Columbus for 8 years.
Well, and
hey,
this,
that's not healthy.
And this smacks of what's his name there, the humongous guy. Why you have to be mad? What was that?
Oh, Brizgalov.
Breezy. Breezy.
Why you have to be mad?
Yeah.
Like, you Russians just don't get it.
Well, and Breezy saying, I don't want to go to Winnipeg. There's no culture there. Okay.
House of the culture in Omsk. Right?
Yeah, this is it. Don't give me that bullshit.
Yeah, it's just, you'd have been better off, maybe not in the room or whatever, but saying publicly, I don't like the coach, than saying, I don't like your city, everybody. It was so weird to think this was going to soften it somehow.
But. Well, yeah. So I think, and there's a lot of talk, right, that, you know, he's come from a very poor upbringing, right, He's benefited hugely in Chicago by the large Russian community there.
Okay.
And that he's looking to get to a market Columbus isn't that market. Not due to its size or lack of jack-in-the-boxes, but really the Russian-speaking community, I think, is huge for him and his wife. I think is probably the driving force there. So he'd like to get to
like where are the big Russian-speaking communities?
Well,
in
I think
North
any
America?
Of the major. I think if you were to go to to New York, to Los Angeles,
Miami.
Miami.
For some reason, I keep hearing Miami. I don't know if there's Russians in Miami, but
I think it's close to Cuba, right?
Yeah. We're not looking for Russian missiles.
Anyways, yeah. That's a little tangent there. I'm not sure how we got on to.
Yeah, no. What was the last? Oh, Terrell Owens.
As I said, speaking characters weird. To characters yeah. to characters.
44-year-old Terrell Owens. Showed up and ran a 4.43, I think it was, in terms of being tested by the Eskimos. Now, they say that was with, track shoes on track instead of, actually having to run it like a football player and whatever. But I guess Terrell is in okay shape, has not played an NFL down in 8 years.
Yeah, crazy shit.
But the Eskimos had him, for those who don't know, most of the top stars in the NFL today are on somebody's CFL negotiations list. I have no idea why Edmonton initially added T.O. to theirs.
And it was the beginning of this year.
Yeah. So someone had reached out to someone and
hello,
said,
hello, Montreal. This smacks of right. the Alouettes.
Well, Chad Ochocinco, right, a couple of years ago, they tried to bring him in. Well, they did bring him in. It didn't go that well. And I'm not sure
shit's
this will.
Shit's not going well.
And essentially what's happened is he has told them, he's triggered a 10-day window.
Sign me or cut me loose.
Which would allow him to sign anywhere. Now, essentially, all Edmonton has to do is sign him to a league minimum contract.
Which is?
50 grand right
50
now.
50 grand Canadian.
Yeah.
Dude is broke, but by the time he pays for his U-Haul,
well, that's it.
He's out of money.
Do you think he's broke?
He actually declared bankruptcy a couple years ago. Yeah.
Oh, damn. I had no idea. See, in my mind, he was just a crazy millionaire who still wanted
no,
to.
No. Okay. He's got no money.
This isn't going to help then, as you stated.
Well, and the thing is, as you said, he can run his 4.4 or 4.38, yeah. whatever it is.
Yeah.
When he left the NFL in 2010, after whatever it was, knee and hip or whatever issues he had, that's what they said. Dude can run.
Right.
Dude cannot make cuts. Right? And so you can run all the 4.4s you want, but as soon as you got to put a hook in that or a hard right-hand turn, whoop, he loses it. And that's what they're saying. And that was 8 years ago.
Right.
I can't imagine.
Now, and he's played in some other shit upstart league since then. I can't remember what it's called. It didn't matter. He's playing like Birmingham or something.
Yeah.
For three games or whatever. And it's not like, despite all their injuries, it's not like the Eskimos are really hurting at receiver right now. And at 44 years old in the Canadian game, the one thing for receivers is, fuck, you got to run. Yeah. Right. And it's a big ass field. Right.
And no matter what anybody else wants to say, and clearly best athletes in football are in the NFL.
Yep.
The Canadian game is very demanding physically on the fitness levels. The clock is quicker.
Mm-hmm.
The field is bigger. It's just everything about it. He would be far and away the oldest receiver in the league right now.
And not just right now, it would be record-setting. Now, he would be just days older in terms of position players. He would be days older than Damon Allen was when he played his last game. But in terms of receivers, at 44 years old, I think the oldest receiver they've ever had in the CFL was 39.
Was Garnie Henley.
I couldn't remember the name. Good on
honestly,
you for...
Christ, Garnie Henley. And he was just under 40, I believe.
Yeah, 39.
But he came back and he coached. And I think he was one of the people that drafted a dead guy. He was here in Ottawa, I think.
Matthew Schwimmer.
Yes. Not
no,
dead. Sorry, Matthew, if you're out there listening.
Career, maybe.
Yes, career is dead, for sure.
Yeah.
But Garnie Henley, he's one of those guys.
The Sens may draft him again.
Well, and Garnie Henley may be in the Senators' front office. He was a rough rider and then came back, I believe, in the red-black days. Just atrocious. Nice. And again, I think he fell asleep during the draft. Drafted right. a dead guy. Honestly, it's really no good. But I'm not sure if you and I were looking at the same article
from Three Down Nation. Probably.
Yeah, they were talking about guys who have played in their 40s,
a lot of
almost
kickers.
Exclusively. QBs, Danny McManus, okay. Damon Allen.
There was a 48-year-old kicker only like 10 okay. years
all
ago.
All right. So then, and they're going through the names with Troy Westwood, Louis Pasaglia, Hank Olisek. You're like, these guys are.
Well, and our own Henry Burris here at
Henry
41.
Henry Burris at 41.
And Anthony Calvillo at 41 for recent names.
All
right?
Quarterbacks.
Yes.
Well, and so those other guys, Cameron, Westwood.
Right.
Olisek. Honestly, and Louis Pasaglia, great stash,
I can't remember the last time I even heard that name when I'm reading the article going, yeah, there's a CFL name.
Forget about how – you're probably too young to even – Hank Olisek.
I don't remember Hank
Had
Olisek.
The huge boot for the Argos in the 80s.
I think I remember any Hanks.
Well, Hank Burris.
Yeah, okay, smiling Hank.
Hank Aaron.
I don't remember Hank. Okay. I know Hank.
Okay, I don't remember Hank either,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Hammering Hank Aaron.
In terms of recent memory receivers who impact got like G. Roy Simon at 37 years old played not to, but to make it at 44, having not played pro ball in 8 years.
And all those guys like dressed in Wexler.
Weston Dressler, yeah.
Weston Drexler, whatever the two first names or two last names. I'm not really
I'm
sure
really
which
sure
that is.
What they are. Only played for Saskatchewan, Winnipeg, likes the banjos.
Well, they've been playing consistently.
Yes.
They haven't been off since they were
That's
26
right.
to play at 36, right.
right?
It's just like,
yeah,
dude, give it up. I don't know. Unless he's going to sign, as you said, Edmonton cuts him loose. But if Edmonton signs him for the minimum, it's a two-year contract.
Yep.
You got to sign for 2 years. And then what?
But there's an out in between.
Oh, okay. I didn't
so,
see that.
That's sort of what a lot of people think the deal is here, is if you sign him to a league minimum deal, which as you've said is 2 years at like 50 grand, you have to give him an option in the middle to go to the NFL. That's the only out, is you can go to the
okay.
NFL.
All right.
And I so don't you think that's
so the play
be...
isn't $250,000 for Montreal next year.
Right.
It's whatever the minimum is playing for blah in the NFL.
You can't, no one's going to even look, right? Like,
oh, they'll look.
Yeah. Point and stare.
Yeah, I'm like, oh my gosh. Look at that. Yeah.
I don't know. For this is so strange to me, and I don't know what the end game is. I could see him, if he's broke as you say he is, maybe he's hoping he gets cut loose and ends up in Montreal for, you know, an average deal for a guy like that. I know we're laughing at the league minimum of 50 grand. What I've heard from a few different things I've read is 70 to 80 grand is what he should expect if he gets to play at all. So at Canadian dollars, is it even fucking worth it? Unless you're broke, I guess, right? Like that is maybe the end game isn't the NFL. Maybe he needs the money and.
Yeah. Well, and again, declared bankruptcy. So I'm not sure what that means in terms of in his personal account. I'm not sure if there's a corporation.
But he doesn't have millions like I thought he did. And this is just shits and gigs. Because he was kind of the Kanye West of the NFL there for a little while, right? Like
for sure. What, dating a bunch of white chicks? Is that where are the white girls at?
Just constantly drawing bad attention to yourself, right? Like. It's
wiping,
not like
wiping his ass, no, doing all those
doing
sorts
that
of things.
Workout in this driveway while his agent's answering.
Next
questions.
Question.
Yeah, exactly.
Next question. He's
Drew
behind
Rosenhaus,
there, crank,
I think.
Cranking out the 115 on the bench.
I don't think Drew Rosenhaus is the one negotiating with the Edmonton Eskimos for steel.
Funny right? how that works, eh?
But I did read one spot that, you know, Montreal might be the spot they're looking to put some people in the seats, and the other deal that keeps coming up that they might be interested in is Johnny Manziel. And could you imagine in October Johnny Manziel throwing passes to Terrell Owens in Montreal? There's your media storm.
Strangely,
there's your
yes I can.
Yeah. Could see it. Man, it's an interesting one. I don't know yet what to make of it, but a 10-day window has been triggered. We will know by next week what's going to happen here, and Edmonton is strangely in on this, right? Like they as soon as he triggered that 10-day window, they could have went, yeah, here's your walking papers or league minimum contract. Instead, they're sitting on it.
Yeah, and again, that is the real intrigue in the story isn't whether he can or can't play. The intrigue in the story is why he would, why Edmonton would put him on their neg list,
right,
and who they're trying to block that from.
Yep. And the only thing that would make sense in that case is another Western team.
Right. And hello, Calgary.
Whew.
Now, there's no way.
I know. Undefeated. Calgary, they're looking for Terrell Owens, but.
No, Eric, what's his name? Eric Rogers. He's gone down. Now, so is their quarterback. So Ottawa's putting a shit kicking on Calgary. While Calgary's putting the shit kicking
on
Ottawa.
The scoreboard, yeah.
Yes. But we're taking guys out.
Any thoughts on them just before we wrap this up? They're 2-2. Both losses, though, have come to appears to be a stacked Calgary team that is 4-0. Lots of people upset with Harris. I don't know. Like, the last one was embarrassing, but
yeah,
I have a hard time reading too much into it.
Okay, my only issue, if they go out and they put a bitch slapping on BC... I'm feeling good about that and moving forward and thinking that they can be in contention for an Eastern Conference championship.
It's like eight teams at 500 or worse.
Only two teams above 500.
Honestly.
But the reality is, my issue with Harris is after the game, he came out and said, you know, I'm the leader. You know, I'm going to take the blame for this. And then he said, although you can't put the blame just on one guy in a loss like this, you know, everybody, you know, the receivers and the D. And then, yeah,
but not really.
And then you finish with that and you're like, well, but I'll take it. And you're like, fuck, you've done the absolute opposite thing of what a true leader would do.
Right.
Instead of just stopping, full stop, it's on me.
Yeah.
I need to be better. I threw for under 100 yards.
Again.
I need to be better. I don't need to hear you say you have receivers dropping balls and the O-line not giving me the protection I need. You know, just, buddy.
Yeah.
Nothing is more cancerous to a team than to hear your leader out there saying, yeah, it's everybody. It's not just me. Look at those guys. Jesus Christ.
Terrible. We're fucking terrible. Strowman on the next episode of Talking.
Look for that.
We'll get to, on Friday's episode, man. I think that's about it for this one. You got anything else?
That's all I got.
All right. That's Talkan Sports. If you want to give us a follow on Twitter, you can do so at Talkan Audio. Facebook.com/Talkan Audio. There's all kinds of bonus stuff for you over at Patreon.com/Talkan.
Bonus!
We'll see you on Friday. That's your spot.
Okay, see ya.
We're not gonna be fucking sucked this year!